From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Produce bins at the grocery stores are filled with fruits and vegetables from around the world. What about the bounty grown close to home? Renee Brooks Katakalos has written The Chesapeake Table, Your Guide to Eating Local. She says beyond boosting Maryland's economy by choosing locally grown and produced foods, foods that spend less time in transit just taste better.
A freshly grown carrot pulled out of the ground tastes different than the carrots that we get in the grocery store. There's a spiciness to it and a freshness that is just not there when you have a vegetable that has been picked, you know, several weeks or months earlier and has been stored.
Advice on eating local, on the record, after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Apples from Washington, spinach from California. When you stroll down the aisles of the grocery store, you can see produce from near. Maryland farmers grew nearly $10 million worth of watermelon last year. And far, blackberries imported from Mexico travel over 2,000 miles to end up in your shopping cart. The New York Times reported recently that more than half the fresh fruit and nearly one-third the fresh vegetables Americans buy are imported from other countries. And while it is wonderful to enjoy ripe mangoes, avocados, and pineapple year-round, what fruits, vegetables, meat, and seafood can be found up and down the Chesapeake watershed? And how do we break down barriers that make it difficult for some families to enjoy locally grown foods? Renee Brooks Katakalos is the former publisher and editor of Edible Chesapeake magazine. She also served as the deputy director for the Future Harvest Chesapeake Alliance for Sustainable Agriculture, a nonprofit that supports new and veteran farmers. Her new book, published by Johns Hopkins Press, is The Chesapeake Table, Your Guide to Eating Local. Welcome to On the Record, Renee.
Thank you.
A decade ago, you and a friend decided to do an experiment and feed your families only with locally produced foods. No tropical fruit, no exotic spices for a month. How'd it go?
It was interesting. It was fun and it was enlightening. We were able to eat more than we thought. We found a lot of great produce and meats and cheeses and most everything that our families wanted here in the Maryland, D.C., Virginia area. But we did have to work for it. We spent more time shopping. We spent more time actually researching to find where we could get the foods that we wanted to eat. And we also realized the things that we were eating that did not come from our area, the things we had to leave off of our tables, like bananas or avocados.
Would that experiment be easier today?
It would be. The growth of the local food system over the past 10 years has been really gratifying to see. It is not as big as it could be, and not as many people know how to access local food as they could. But there are many more farms catering to local buyers. There are a lot more programs being offered at municipal and county and state levels that support the distribution of local food into our local economy more easily. And I think more stores, restaurants, and even institutions are actually buying local, even when it's not labeled that way for consumers to see.
What stuck with you from the experiment?
It's very different eating locally grown food sometimes. It was surprising to me, things like carrots, for instance. That was a big surprise for me and my kids at the time, that a freshly grown carrot pulled out of the ground tastes different than the carrots that we get in the grocery store. There's a spiciness to it and a freshness that is just not there when you have a vegetable that has been picked, you know, several weeks or months earlier and has been stored, or in the case of baby carrots, has been like the supposed baby carrots has been whittled down and you only have parts of it or whatever. It's amazing.
What are the misconceptions about eating local?
You know, misconceptions generally have some kernel of truth in them. So I won't say everything is a misconception, but I think that there are some obstacles for people. It can be more expensive. If you are not familiar with doing it at the beginning. So I think one of the key things is that people have to first understand seasonality. And there are ways to find that. The Maryland Department of Agriculture and the Virginia Department of Agriculture all have websites where you can see what's in season at different times of the year. Once you know what's in season where you live, you can more easily choose the things that are likely to be grown locally, even if they're in a grocery store. And when things are bought by the grocery stores in season, the volume is there, the farmers have a lot of it, they're plentiful, the prices generally are not going to be higher. But if you're trying to buy things out of season, you can run into that a little bit more. So, for instance, understanding that tomatoes grown by a local farmer in the wintertime may come out of a greenhouse, just like the ones probably coming from Mexico or from California might. The price differential there is going to be, you know, maybe higher. But in the summertime, when our local farmers have fields and fields of tomatoes, they have a glut of tomatoes, you are going to find that there is not really a price differential there. You may be able to get them cheaper from local farms than you're getting them in the grocery store, and they will be much more flavorful.
Your point about a locally grown tomato might come out of a greenhouse in the winter. So if you're not eating seasonal, are you really not eating local?
You know, you are still eating local. Obviously, there's a proximity factor about local. If you're going to eat a tomato in the winter, I'd rather you eat one that's grown in a local greenhouse than one that's been grown in a greenhouse 2,000 miles away and then shipped here. Season extension is definitely a practice that a lot of our local farmers use, and it helps them to stay viable year-round.
That's Renee Brooks Katakalos here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. She's former editor of Edible Chesapeake magazine. Her new book is The Chesapeake Table, Your Guide to Eating Local. It explores the complexity of our region's food system. How big is the locavore movement?
It's still in single digits in terms of the amount of food that is being sourced locally. There's a lot of room to grow. The USDA has just started to do a survey of farms that sell directly to consumers on a local basis. They ran that survey for the first time in 2015. And they did find that in Maryland and Virginia, we're actually a couple of percentage points ahead of the national average in terms of volume of sales directly to local consumers. Part of it has to do with supply. We have more local farmers who are growing and who are coming to farmers markets and who are finding ways to sell to grocery stores or finding ways through aggregation techniques. Sometimes you might hear people talk about food hubs, ways for small farmers to bring their production together to make larger volumes that they can sell to larger volume outlets like schools or hospitals or hotels or grocery stores. So in that way, more local food is actually getting into circulation in our region beyond the farmers market.
Besides the obvious, tomatoes, corn, seafood, what else is locally produced in Maryland?
You know, practically everything. Meats, for instance, are a really large part of our local food economy. Lots of farmers are grazing animals on grass. Beef, pork, lamb, goat. There's even a farm that grows and sells water buffalo meat. So people are looking at all different animals that can graze well in our climate. Obviously poultry, you know, free-range chickens, as well as, of course, at this time of year, turkey. Seafood is an obvious one, but it's actually, I think, a little bit more challenging than people sometimes think. You know, a blue crab, you can know you're getting a blue crab if you see it in its shell. But crab meat is more of a challenge, actually. If people think about it, the amount of crabs in the bay is really not enough to support the prolific number of crab cake entrees that we see on restaurants everywhere. So, you know, most of the crab meat that you see on menus is not coming from the Chesapeake Bay. So I actually, you know, advise people to kind of stay away from crab cakes unless you're doing them yourself and go for fish that you know are coming from the bay. You know, you can get a lot of named oysters out of the bay now. 80% of the aquaculture clams across the country actually come from the Virginia part of the Chesapeake Bay. And then other fish, rockfish, of course, but other fish like croaker, porgies, black bass. There's lots of fish that come out of the Chesapeake Bay that people don't think about.
You say security is one of the important reasons to encourage the local food system. Explain mm-hmm. that.
Well, you know, food security has a lot of different meanings, but the local food movement addresses really all of them. You know, on the one hand, you're talking about actually the safety of the food supply, contamination or things like that. One thing about having a local source of food is that the chain of custody of that food from the farm to the consumer is much shorter. It may be directly from the farmer to the consumer. So if there is a problem with it, it's very easy and quick to trace it and find out where that problem originated from and to kind of contain it before it goes very far. Although, honestly, there are very few reports of foodborne illness coming from locally sourced foods in our region. Security in terms of the distribution of getting food from farm to consumer. One of the stories I tell in the book is about One Straw Farm, which is in Baltimore County. Joan and Drew Norman run that farm and have for decades. And they were selling most all of their produce into a wholesale channel before 9/11. They're running the largest organic vegetable farm in the state, and they were selling wholesale. Their food was being shipped off some hundreds of miles to a grocery store warehouse and then brought back to grocery stores in Baltimore. And when 9/11 happened, Joan tells the story often that some of her neighbors said to her, if something like this happens again, if the roads are cut off, if trucks can't get into grocery stores, can we buy vegetables from you? And she said it was a kind of wake-up moment for her because she didn't really know how to do that. So she switched her whole model from doing 90% wholesale to actually doing 90% directly to consumers, taking her food to a number of farmers markets and to community-supported agriculture program where people pay in advance and then every week come and get a share of what's grown on her farm. So she started feeding her neighbors versus sending her food off and having it come back. So the security of the food supply is important.
You write that the growth of farmers markets and community-supported agriculture programs, CSAs, where people purchase a weekly share of vegetables, has leveled out.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think there's more room for expanding support for a local food system?
I think it's definitely through these other channels that get to people who are not ready or able to make the conscious decision that I'm going to go and buy local. You know, farmers markets and community-supported agriculture programs are a conscious step that many of us take to support our local farm community or just to get better food for ourselves. A lot of people just feel like I'm going to the farmers market because the food is healthier, it tastes great, I'm going to pick it myself, and that's what I'm going to do. But what will drive growth is for local food to get into channels where people are not having to make that conscious decision. So that's the kinds of things like farm to school, where the school trays, if they're going to have apples on them, they should be Maryland apples. Where hospital cafeterias, if they're going to have green beans and kale and collard greens served on a lunch line, why should they not have come from Maryland? This is what the local farming community is looking at. How do we work more with institutions that can buy larger volumes of local food? How can we work more with grocery stores to make sure that they are stocking, like you said, the local watermelons, local sweet potatoes at this time of year, butternut squash, greens, and the things that are being grown by local farmers so that people can buy them whether they're thinking about buying local or not? You know, that's the way it used to be. Grocery stores were sourcing from local farms at local produce auctions. People didn't have to think about whether I'm buying local or not, because most of what you bought was local, unless it was something that you knew was exotic and imported. So it's kind of like getting back to that.
We need to take a quick break here. We're on the record talking with Renee Brooks Katakalos about her new book, The Chesapeake Table, Your Guide to Eating Local. When we're back, delicious recipes and how to get involved in the local food movement. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
The On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. In planning a bountiful meal for Thanksgiving, followers of the locavore movement may have ordered their turkey from a local farm, cruised by the farmer's market to buy produce or dried herbs, or purchased a pie from a local bakery. These are the kinds of choices encouraged by Renee Brooks Katakalos, former publisher and editor of Edible Chesapeake magazine. We're talking about her latest book, The Chesapeake Table, Your Guide to Eating Local, which highlights the value of our local food system and explains how supporting farmers benefits both consumers and producers. What fruits and vegetables are in season in Maryland right now?
Well, it's fall harvest season, which is really what Thanksgiving is. It's a harvest celebration. So root vegetables, sweet potatoes, white potatoes as well, beets, turnips, radishes, things like that are in season right now, as well as winter squash. Butternut squash is plentiful, acorn squash, pumpkins, other hard-shelled types of squash. And then winter greens are still out, kale, collard greens. The hardier, really dark leafy green vegetables are in season. And apples are our final kind of fruit harvest of the year. So orchards are starting to bring in the late harvest apples, the ones that store very well over the winter time. So these apples can be used right now, but they also can be put in your cellar or your basement and kept through the winter time. And also you'll see those apples continue to come out at the farmers markets that stay open year round. They'll have them in cold storage so that they stay great through the winter.
What locally produced foods can people find year-round?
For those who eat meat, meats are available year-round, and they may be at certain times frozen. But, I mean, that's the great thing about meat is that the farmers can have those animals processed, and if they sell the meat at that time, it's great, but they all are equipped with freezer storage so that they can have that on hand and continue to sell that. And we as consumers also can buying in bulk. I often will split a quarter of a steer with two or three other families, and then we keep that in the freezer, and it's less expensive to buy the locally raised meat that way. We're getting great meat, and we can have it on hand whenever we're ready to have it. The seafood from the Bay does have seasons, so there are different things available at different times based on the migration of the fish and shellfish in the Bay, but there's always something that's available. We're starting to have more great fishmongers around who can tell you, what's local, what is coming out of the Bay now, what's in season and things like that. You can also store certain types of vegetables and fruits yourself for use year round. That's another way in which our local food system could grow, would be to bring back the ability to can and preserve more things locally. You know, this area used to be famous for canned tomatoes. I like to freeze things from the summertime to use. Tomatoes freeze very well. If you're going to use them in something like chili or stew or things like that through the winter, you just blanch them for a few seconds in hot water, and then you put them on a flat tray and put them in the freezer uncovered until they're like really hard, like just little billiard balls. And then you just put them into Ziploc bags in your freezer, and you take them out when you're ready to throw them in something, and they just cook right down, but they still have the fresh, bright flavor of summer.
What are baby steps for people who are interested in incorporating locally produced foods?
One of the best ones, I think, really is to just go to a farmer's market. You don't have to go thinking that you're going to buy everything that's there. Take $10 with you and see what you can get for that. It might be a splurge on a pie made with some local fruit, or you might decide to buy, a bunch of cucumbers and tomatoes in the summer to do a salad with. The Maryland Department of Agriculture and the Buy Local Challenge that happens every summer says that if every household in Maryland spent just $10 a week at the farmer's market in the 8 weeks of summer, we would put $200 million back into the local farm economy. That's just going in the summertime. Imagine if everyone just spent $10 a week on something that was locally produced. Just buy one thing. You know, look for milk in the grocery store that is from a local dairy cooperative. Something that is important to you that you think you could stick with buying local, you know, several times a year. Start there. And I think it's a slippery slope. Once you start, I think you won't be able to stop.
This is On the Record on WIP. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with farming and local food advocate Renee Brooks Katakalos. Her new book is The Chesapeake Table, Your Guide to Eating Local. You mentioned recipes. Your book includes some recipes, and you brought a few to share with us. Tell us about making applesauce.
Applesauce is one of the easiest things you can do. And honestly, I don't think you can mess it up at all. But my approach to doing applesauce is a little bit different than some recipes you might find. Lots of times, commercially made applesauce is often, they'll just cut up the apples and cook the whole thing down with the seeds in there and with the peels and everything, and then you can strain that out at the end. And that makes a very smooth kind of an applesauce. I prefer mine chunkier, so the recipe I have in the book does have a little bit of upfront work. So you take the apples and you quarter them and you peel them and you take out the cores. But then you just put them in a pot with a little bit of water and a little bit of lemon juice, and you just simmer them down until they are applesauce, and that's pretty much it.
Next up, creamy potato and kale soup.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites. And it's actually based on my father-in-law, Louis Katakalos, was a Greek restaurateur. And he was always cooking for everyone all the time. But he used to always make a potato soup that was a really soothing soup to have in the fall and winter, or if you were sick or something like that, he'd make potato soup. So I just added the twist of basically cooking kale down with the potatoes and then pureeing it all together. This is a way to partly use kale, because lots of times you do have a lot of kale, and just cooking it straight is not to everyone's liking. So mixing it with the potatoes, I find, creates a very mellow but an earthy flavor. It kind of kicks up the flavor on the potato side, but kind of tones it down a little on the kale side. And it's, you know, it does make a green soup, which intrigues children. And they'll eat it. And it doesn't scare people who might be afraid of kale, but those who do like kale really like this soup. I've actually sampled it at a number of farmers markets this season, and everyone, hands down, for some reason, they're surprised that they love it. I'm not sure why they're surprised, because, you know, potatoes and kale and a little bit of milk to make it creamy. What's not to love about that?
Lastly, you have a recipe for maple pecan pie, a bit more involved. I'm not going to ask you to go through it all. We'll post the recipe at the On the Record page. But curious, where do you get locally grown maple syrup?
You can get it at farmers markets in the wintertime. You can get it at some stores. There is the main source in Maryland that I'm aware of is called S&S Maple Camp. It's out in Western Maryland. Their syrup is on the shelves at many co-ops and stores that source local in the area. Like I live down closer to D.C., so the Tacoma Park Co-op always has it. Stores like Mom's Organic Market around the region stock it. And you can sometimes find them or other smaller maple producers at farmers markets. So, yeah, it's basically a pecan pie that replaces the Karo syrup with maple syrup. And then if you can get maple sugar, I also replace the regular sugar with maple sugar. That's really the only difference between it and a regular pecan pie. The maple gives a real flavor versus just a sweetness. So, yeah.
Any tips on pie crust?
You know, I do. The recipe does include a pie crust recipe that you can do with local butter and locally ground flour. Finding flour is a little bit more challenging, but there are more and more local farms grinding flour and bringing it to market. But you know what? I have also found that Atwaters sometimes sells a pie dough that is the same as the pie doughs that they use for their pies, which is great. And so I have bought that at Atwater's stores before, and that is a great, great shortcut.
We have to wrap up, but we've talked about a lot of different benefits of buying and eating local. When you find that people have really committed to it or moved from not thinking about it to thinking about it, what is the one thing that most motivates them? Is it the security? Is it the taste? Is it the nutrition?
There's taste, there's security. There's, for some people, the environmental benefits of usually you're cutting down on carbon footprint by the travel of the food as well as the methods that are being used to grow it locally. But you know what? I think it really boils down to are the relationships that you can have with the people who are producing that food, whether it's an urban farm in your neighborhood or whether it's going to a farmer's market and talking to someone who has grown that food or raised those animals. I think it's the relationships with the people from whom you can learn about the food that really, really gets people committed to doing this.
Thanks for talking to us about it, and congratulations on the book.
Thank you so much.
Renee Brooks Katakalos is the author of The Chesapeake Table, Your Guide to Eating Local. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, we have links to Renee's recipes. You can also catch Renee at the Pikesville Library next month, December 19th, 2:30 p.m. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Glad you've been listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.